This morning, we've heard a praise psalm and two very different stories of people being called by God. The first is very dramatic. The doorposts and thresholds shaking and the temple being filled with smoke as the seraphim fly around. The second is, in some ways, more ordinary. It's not in a temple or other holy place. It's by a lake where people are fishing. Jesus coming to the people where they are and calling them to follow him from there. A very Methodist way of doing things. As the reading continues, it gets far more extraordinary with these fishermen who haven't caught anything all night, unable to hold all the fish now available to them after Jesus told Peter to put out into the deep water and let down the nets for a catch. In each passage, the man being called is afraid. Isaiah describes himself as a man of unclean lips, and Peter as a sinful man. They both think they are unworthy of God's calling. Added to this, in the case of Isaiah, he believes he will die now that he has seen the Lord, because in Exodus chapter 33, verse 20, God told Moses that he could not see God's face because no one could see God and live. The scene from Isaiah is frightening. He says he saw the Lord sitting on a throne, high and exalted in this morning's translation, lofty or lifted up in others. If the train, or hem in some translations, of God's robe filled the temple, it means God is very, very big. Then there are these six-winged seraphs, which aren't the angels you may imagine, like those in many paintings. These are flying serpents, whose voices are so loud that the temple shakes. No wonder Isaiah is fearful. This is the Lord who sees and knows all things, seemingly too big and too much for the temple. And he thinks he is totally unworthy to witness his holiness, having lived in a sinful community and so being guilty by association at the very least. Unclean lips is very specific, and there is a remedy for it. If the seraph has to use tongs to pick up the coal from the altar, it must be hot. Ouch! Poor Isaiah, having that touch his lips. He's told, see, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for. I quite like the poetic language of the New Revised Standard Version, where the seraph says, now that this has touched your lips, your guilt has departed and your sin is blotted out. On overhearing the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Isaiah volunteers. It would be interesting to know whether he was doing this with enthusiasm or out of relief that he wasn't ruined, that he wasn't going to die having seen the Lord and this strange heavenly vision. Was he like a child who can't wait to do an errand, or more like the unwilling volunteer at a meeting when there's a job no one really wants? If he is enthusiastic, this may be rather premature, as in the next verses, which weren't read this morning, he's told by God that people in those days, of course. When he has finished speaking, he tells Simon to put out into deep water and lets down the nets for a catch. Simon responds, perhaps with exhaustion and possibly irritation as well. Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I will let down the nets. This reminds me of childhood conversations with adults wanting me to try doing something again that I'd given up on because it was difficult. They knew that if I just tackled it in a slightly different way or slowed down perhaps, I would succeed. Proving them right was a mixed blessing. It's good to master a skill, but it's very annoying as a child when adults are right. In such conversations, my parents probably couldn't count the times they asked me to do something and I sighed loudly and said, if you say so, or, okay, but it won't work. Sound familiar? Simon and his partners are fishermen. They fish for a living. If they fished all night and caught nothing, surely there isn't anything there for them to catch. We were told near the start of the passage that when Jesus got into the boat, the fishermen were cleaning their nets. If they let them down now and catch nothing, which seems likely to them, they'll have to do that all over again. We're not talking about small nets like children might use on a beach holiday, as I imagined when I first heard this story as a child. These nets are made of rope, many meters long, and cleaning them properly would not have been a quick or easy job. And doing it all over again after a long, tiring night with nothing to show at the end of it would really test Simon's patience. Nevertheless, Simon and his partners let down the nets and catch so many fish that the nets start to break. They signal to their partners from the other boat to come and help, and both boats are filled so full of fish that they start to sink. Definitely not the result Simon was expecting. Now for a reminder of verses 8 to 11. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man." For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people." So they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him. So verse 8 is the first time in the passage we find out that the fisherman is Simon Peter, as in Peter, who kept putting his foot in it at various times during Jesus' ministry on earth, and who turns into a preacher at Pentecost, when the Holy Spirit is sent to the disciples after Jesus' crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension. We know this now because many of us are familiar with other Bible stories about Jesus and his disciples. Calling the fisherman Simon Peter at this point in Luke's Gospel would have shown the reader who he was. After this amazing catch, realizes there's something special about Jesus. He called him Master earlier, and now refers to him as Lord. He falls to his knees, begging Jesus to go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man. In the face of this miracle, he sees himself as sinful and utterly unworthy of this amazing person who causes such things to happen. Unlike in the Isaiah reading, Jesus does not grant Peter forgiveness, but tells him, do not be afraid, and says that from now on he will fish for people, or catch people. This can be a problematic image, suggesting as it does, catching them in a net, whether or not they want to be caught. The fish in this passage have no choice in the matter. I think it's far better to try to catch people's attention so that they want to learn more about God and what it means to follow Jesus. To make a life with Christ an appealing prospect by showing hospitality, kindness and care for others, and being willing to listen to their questions about Christianity, discussing them with kindness and an open heart. No one likes to feel trapped or as if they are out of their depth in something they're not really sure they want to be a part of. So an invitation in the spirit of all are welcome is a wonderful way to make people feel safe enough to come to a service and see what it's like, or attend a coffee morning or other community event. Perhaps the net could be more like a safety net, catching and holding people when they need to know that God and others love them and care about them. So affected are Peter and his fellow fishermen that they bring their boats up on the shore, leave everything and follow Jesus. This leaves me with so many questions, like, what happened to all those fish they just caught? And do I have to leave everything in order to follow Jesus? I think the important thing to take away from this reading is the abundance of fish, which symbolizes God's abundant gifts for all of us. What are you being called to do at the moment? It could be something big, like starting a new job or training for something within the church or your work life. Or perhaps God is nudging you towards going to see a friend or helping someone you come across who needs a smile, a wave, or a few kind words in the moment you see them. Passing on God's love and care for others in a tangible way that they can see, hear, or touch. Or maybe we're called to pray for a particular situation or person or various things on a regular basis. There are so many ways of following Jesus. And perhaps, as I'm speaking, you're thinking, but I can't do that thing people have suggested. More godly people do those things. I'm not worthy. But in both readings today, God and Jesus come to these men when they are totally unprepared and call them to follow just as they are now, not after they've been sent on a course or passed an exam, but now. Worship is a coming together of like-minded people to praise, glorify, and learn about God, but it's also a time for us to understand our worth. We are all worthy to be here this morning, and with God always by our side. We are all loved by God, just as we are, and He has chosen each and every one of us because we are beautiful in His eyes, and He sees something in us that we may not yet see in ourselves. We are all worthy to follow Him, and because He has called us,